It is Saturday, September 29th, 2012. We are broadcasting from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio. It's time now for Geek Speak. And today's theme song was by Dave Patera, and it's a Creative Commons share and share alike. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Miles Elam. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In the air room with me is Lindsay Lonnie, systems analyst, support engineer, and software engineer.
Good morning, Miles.
Ah, there you are.
Hi, I'm here.
And also Bonnie Jean Primsch, mediator, printmaker, and broadcaster at large.
Howdy. Howdy and guten Morgen.
And I believe that we are going to start off with the geek news, and we'll start off with Lindsay.
All right, so some major banks were hit with the biggest cyber attacks in history, supposedly. Since September 9th, the websites of Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank, and PNC Bank all suffered day-long slowdowns and were sporadically unreachable for many customers. The cyber attacks implemented what is called a denial-of-service attack, and it essentially directs huge amounts of web traffic to the website and makes it unavailable to users. No data is stolen with these kinds of attacks, so it was sort of passive in some ways. You don't have to go, you know, change your passwords or anything like that.
So it's kind of like someone organizes, gets a whole bunch of people to park their cars in front of your driveway, so they're not breaking into your house, they're just preventing you from ever leaving.
Exactly. Something kind of like that, or ever getting in, one
right.
or the other. Basically, what they're saying is they're not sure who's done this. Likely, the attacker spent months planning to do something like this because it wasn't the kind of thing we normally see with the botnet where you get a bunch of end user, you and me, normal people, their computers get taken over and directed at a website to bring it down. This is something that would have taken a lot of servers, large scale servers, in order to bring it down. So there would have had to been planning to take these servers over and create a server-based botnet to direct the traffic at the banks. Some people are saying that hacktivists, you know, hackers that are activists have done something like this. But a lot of others say no, because there's an Islamist group, Izzad Din al-Qassam, the cyber fighters, have claimed that they are the ones that did this. But people are saying no, there's a bunch of dissent of who might have done it and why they did it.
Right. And let's also be clear when we're talking about a botnet. When we tell people that you need to get virus protection and the like for your computers.
It's for that stuff.
Right. Well, it's not. To protect against someone attacking you. It's
to
because...
protect your computer from being used in this sort of a shenanigan?
Exactly.
Aha.
That when people say, oh, well, I don't have anything on my computer that's worth protecting. Yeah, but other people do. And so
right.
It's kind of like you're driving, you're helping to drive the getaway car, you know?
Right. Yeah. I don't know, someone just asked me to drive. Yeah, no, it doesn't qualify.
I just delivered a package. What?
The final theory is that it's Iran doing it because of retaliation for sanctions, but nobody really knows yet. We'll see what happens.
Oh, I'm just going to do a quick little news segment, which is a public service announcement from scientists around the world.
Oh, from science?
Yes.
Science.
Science says.
Yes, they're trying to make kids cry.
Aww,
at their
what?
Birthdays.
Hey.
Yes.
It's my party.
Scientists.
What they're saying at large is that we're wasting helium by putting it in balloons. Helium being that noble gas that doesn't react with anything, so, you know, doesn't explode like uh-huh. you know, certain other, or burn like certain other gases that are very light, like hydrogen. And we use them commonly for helium balloons.
At the parties.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Except that they are a limited resource. They're a byproduct many times of either drilling or mining. And we will capture them just as a side product. And we're like, oh, what do we do with it now? Oh, I don't know.
We'll Here's a fancy
compress
balloon.
It into a container and give it to people and they can use it at parties.
Okay.
But it's also very useful for... It's useful for the medical industry when it's mixed with air, makes it less dense. It's useful for cooling in certain circumstances in industrial settings where you don't want anything flammable.
Oh.
And it's a finite resource that once it goes out of that balloon, it can go up and escape into the Earth's atmosphere and beyond because it's so light, the Earth's gravity
back,
is not, you know, pulling it back again.
Yeah. All right.
So it is that finite resource that is going away. So that is our public service announcement that is making little kids cry at their birthdays.
So I see. So the scientists are taking the fun away with that, replacing it with alternate fun.
Unless we come up with fusion, in which case we'll have an unending supply of helium to work with.
That's going to happen,
get on
right?
that, Miles.
Yeah.
I just need to get on that.
I keep picturing.
Speaking of fun, GeekSpeak is having a pledge show, and we have a matching gift from Dr. Don.
This is so sweet. Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky making it possible, literally paying it forward.
Yes.
Delightful. It's a $1,700 matching gift, you guys. Is
the biggest matching pledge that GeekSpeak has ever had.
Nice.
Thank you so much, Dr. Don and Charlie Mansky. Now, if you do pledge during the show, that means that every dollar you spend is being matched by them. And making your dollar worth twice as much. It's like a 401k program where your company is matching.
Matching funds.
So it's free money.
Yeah, it's free money. Well, for us.
That's my
still.
Favorite.
Yeah.
Geeks, we can totally do this. Free money. I love it.
So do you want to say some more about that, Lindsay? It sounds like you're gearing up towards something there.
Yeah. When you listen to news on 88.9 KSP, you hear about the stuff that matters. We don't waste your time with the latest celebrity scandals, stuff from the crime blotters. Our mission is to illuminate, untangle, explain, investigate, especially here on GeekSpeak. We do a lot of investigating and talking about what we investigate.
Yeah, and doing public service announcements about helium.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Important.
We like to identify solutions too.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Where else are you going to hear news stories about that?
We identify some solutions, fusion. So somebody's going to get on that now that we've talked about it. There's plenty of news outlets that sensationalize and play on people's fears. And, you know, we're here to help out, educate. And if you care about having a place on the radio that helps you connect the dots, this is it. And we need your support during this campaign.
We do. And what we mean by support is you contacting us in some fashion and offering a dollar amount that you would like to contribute to the station. And when you do, of course, Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky have very sweetly offered to match whatever you contribute, dollar for dollar, up to a total of $1,700. So if you wanted to give a very popular amount, like $100 or $120, that's something that you could parse out over the year at $10 a month, then it becomes $240 thanks to Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky.
And just to put a geek angle on this, just because we love math.
Yes.
The number of listeners that KUSP has and the number of podcast listeners, yes, we know you're listening. If they all pitched in $5, like not even a big deal. We know from the numbers that if you pitched in $5, $3, you would still end up with everything that we would need to keep the station going.
Yeah.
To have our equipment running, to have these great programs that you listen to continue.
And that's in the ideal world where everyone who listens gets it, that they're a part of the public in this public radio station.
I also want to hit those people that are saying, like, things are tight right now. It's like, so $3-5.
Do your part. Do your part.
Yeah.
Make your coffee
and
at
if
home
you're in
instead
a,
of going to Starbucks this morning or wherever you go for your coffee.
If you do that for a week, you might find... Anyway, the health show was the last hour.
Right.
And if you're in a position to spot the people who are feeling awkward about how little they can give or that they can't give at all, well, then you'll be doing those listeners a solid and everyone else.
Exactly.
So just whatever you can contribute right now is very, very useful. It happens to be doubled by Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky right now, which helps us. We've got an overall goal during this pledge drive of making $115,000. So, you know, the $1,700 that we're hoping to raise thanks to Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky is an important drop in the bucket,
which
is part of what we're doing.
Isn't very difficult provided that we have people who are motivated.
Right.
Who are go-getters, who...
Well, you know, I'm going to help out with a little bit with the motivation by providing some real ways that folks can contact us. There's a phone number, and there's a web address.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah. The phone number is 888-777-1507. Make a note of it. 888-777-1507. And here's the web address. It's kusp.org. Right from the homepage there, there's a big red support KUSP Half Moon. Just click on that. And in a couple of minutes, you'll be all set. We've got lots of people ready to take your call if you want to call us up. They're anxious to hear from you. They're here on purpose. And they would love to talk to you. So,
as opposed to accidentally. We tripped, fell, and landed in the station.
Oh, you want a what now? Oh, okay. I guess I'll take your point, I guess. They're here specifically for this purpose and wanting to help out in this way. So thank you for putting them to good use as well.
And these, we were talking about people, but this is Geek Speak. So we got to talk a little bit about not people, like say robots.
Oh, I thought you meant
like
geeks.
Say the robots that drive cars.
Oh yeah, what's going on with that?
Yeah, it's now officially legal in the state of California. It has been signed into law by California Governor Jerry Brown.
But what's the extent of it? We're not all just going to like, great, I'm going to, you know, just get out my laptop and let
this
the car
is allowing autonomous cars. Right now, you can't buy an autonomous car.
Okay.
Like, we're not there yet.
Uh-huh. So it's sort of a theoretical law.
Or rather, I'm sure someone could, but none of us who are in the 99% could.
Wait, so is this, it's just for Google?
Speak for yourself. Really?
Well, yes, it's laying that groundwork so that Google and Stanford both together have been piloting, or rather not piloting cars.
I get it.
For quite some time. What they've been doing is having engineers that have been sitting in the, riding shotgun, as it were, or riding in the driver's seat and just not having it, having our hands off.
Look, Ma.
So there was a safety valve of a human being, and they did so well that it's been making a really good point for there being actual autonomous cars.
All right. So they were laying the groundwork for people being comfortable passing this law.
Right. Before it was legal just because there was a human being in the car. So that's fine. Now it is legal for them to do trials now and to do more groundwork with regard to a car that doesn't have that safety net of a person in there that's just going to be driving around.
Mm-hmm. So any thoughts about that, geeks? Is this progress?
Oh, I think it dovetails nicely with the fact that Tesla, the electric car company, is also putting out a whole bunch of charging stations and offering the charging for free for the lifetime of that car. So if you buy a Tesla fairly soon, then you go to these special Tesla charging stations and you can just, you know, top off at any time.
Wow, that's pretty great. That's like having your credit union debit card and not having to pay any fee if you use a credit union ATM machine.
Yeah, it's you know, almost offsets the $50,000 vehicle cost.
Eventually.
I wonder how long the life of the vehicle is, where those are going to be placed, how many there are going to be, things
like
that.
Well, I'm actually wondering whether they can be replaced in the future with the lithium air batteries that IBM and others are working on that are ridiculously high capacity. And we covered on the show before, but they're the kind that are like conservatively 10 times the capacity of existing batteries.
Really? It's because they use lithium air. Is this where the helium thing comes back in?
Do we need
lithium air batteries are, in fact, using the oxygen in air as... and now I'm not going to be adding myself as a non-science major. I can't remember if it's cathode or the anode. I believe it's the anode. Where right now you have to have both cathode and the anode and a battery, and so they end up being much more... it's a heavier battery.
Okay.
And it takes up more space.
So you needed two things before, but now because of lithium air batteries, you just need one thing.
Well, what you're doing is you have the lithium just by itself, and then you have some way of moderating the reaction with the oxygen in the atmosphere to do it. It makes a lithium peroxide in there. So basically you have air-breathing batteries.
Okay.
So it breathes air as you're going out around the world, going out in the world, and then when you bring it back home and you put a charge to it, it releases oxygen.
Uh-huh. And so, are those the batteries that are in the Tesla cars that can be charged now?
No, they are not. Unfortunately, we are still stuck with lithium ion batteries as the state of the art.
Mm. State of the art.
Science has a lot to work on.
Hey, Tesla. Yes, science is cool.
Get busy, science.
And Lindsay, your next story.
Well, Tim Cook, you know who that is?
Who is Tim Cook?
Yeah, I don't.
He's the Apple chief executive now that Steve Jobs is no longer there.
Okay.
He did something that's kind of unprecedented for Apple. He apologized for the company's new Maps app in a letter that was posted to their website on Friday. He said that they're extremely sorry for the frustration that customers have had with Maps and that the company's working to improve the application. He also did the most unprecedented part of this. So they have apologized previously, I think once before. But
for the antennas, the cases,
yeah,
the case debacle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs did the apology for that. But what he did is actually redirected people to use other Maps apps from other vendors. Mostly he said the things that are available from their store, like Bing, MapQuest, and Waze. But he did mention that you can use web-based apps like Google and Nokia. So if you've got that, I don't know. I haven't seen, but there were some pictures online. There's a site that shows all these pictures of strange directions and strange images. It's pretty entertaining.
I have I did upgrade to iOS 6 on my iPhone. Okay. And because I have an older iPhone, and when I say older, I mean it's 2 years old. Oh my God, this is practically ancient. iPhone 4.
Get with it, Geezer.
It doesn't do the turn-by-turn stuff that's been touted, but at the same time, the traffic, before it was easy to tell whether it was northbound or southbound that was being slow, and now that's a bit more ambiguous. It's harder to tell.
So let me see if I got this right. So Tim Cook is apologizing, a little Apple humble pie.
Mm-hmm.
For the Maps app.
Or is it humble apple pie?
That's whichever. Question. It's your choice. Your choice. It's the new Apple. You get to choose. But at the same time, the Google Maps isn't on there, right?
That's correct. It's not supplied. As soon as they made their Maps app available, they were not supplying it with the phones with iOS 6. You can still you have a browser on the phone, you can just use the browser and go to the Google Maps app through your browser on your phone. So,
So there's a workaround.
Yes. Okay. They're recommended Bing, MapQuest, and Waze
apps.
There
is an app for that.
There is an app for that. Kind of.
Yeah. So is he sorry it's so bad, but it's going to stay bad? Or
it's not all bad. Like, there are aspects to it that I do like.
I'm asking more about, is Tim Cook just saying, sorry, it's awful? Or are they going to do something?
He's saying that the more people that continue to use it, which they've had a huge amount of people already using the app, but the more people that use it and provide feedback, the better the app will get, is what he's saying.
Oh,
that and when they're apologizing, it's apologizing for reducing functionality. Always in the past, it's like they've never apologized because they didn't have near-field communication for like payment at stores, you know, that type of thing. And they didn't apologize for not having 4G support earlier than now.
Okay.
Because the iPhone didn't have it before.
Yeah.
You know, but this is a case where the Maps did have functionality like public transit views, and now it doesn't.
Oh.
Yeah, and part of what they pride themselves on is, you know, releasing quality products, et cetera. So, hence the apology, I guess.
Right. But now they're playing catch up with Google Maps. We'll see how that goes.
I can't imagine with all the cars that Google's had driving around that you could catch up after something like that, but who knows?
Yeah, they're working on it. And speaking of working on stuff, we're still working on $1,500. We have $1,500 left to go in the Meet Dr. Don Motyka and Charlie Mansky match before the end of Geek Speak at the end of this hour. And
totally
with the pledge, or with the drive so far, we have 24,000.
Right, so we're
making progress, but we still need you to step up and give us that extra little lip, that extra little push, to get us over the top for this hour.
And that's true for people who are listening right now. And to those who are listening later on the podcast, it's not too late. The station still needs your contribution because it takes a little something to make the podcast available to you.
Right. The podcast, we've had people say before, how do I pledge to GeekSpeak on the podcast? Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily know about KOS because I'm not listening to their transmitters. But you are listening to the infrastructure here, and you are listening to the microphones here.
Right.
You're listening to this board that I am operating hopefully operating well this time. I've had some snappies
so far,
with
so
that.
Good.
Yeah.
You got the producer okay on that one.
And I mean, there's a huge amount that goes into GeekSpeak that isn't just putting it as an audio file up on the NPR podcast. So that's why we need your help. That's why we're calling and asking for the donation from you. And every donation that you make is matched by Dr. Don Motyka and Charlie Mansky.
This amount that they're giving, as you said before, Miles, is the most that we have ever had as a matching gift.
Yeah, they're throwing down the gauntlet.
So I'm really hoping we can make it. Of course, it's not up to me.
889 KUSP signed on 4 decades ago. In the past few years, we've worked in partnership with our contributing listeners to prepare for a fifth decade. 5 decades of public service. That's a lot.
Yeah, we want it.
We brought online major upgrade of the website last year. We made significant capital investments to the broadcasting technology here and atop Mount Toro. And most significantly, we committed ourselves to expanding news coverage of the issues that our listeners care about.
And a new board, which have to say is noticeably better than the last set of infrastructure that we had.
It is super fancy. There's lights, buttons, all kinds of stuff
it
over there.
It works good. It works good.
Good said.
It works good.
The most distinguishing characteristic is this. Over the past 40 years, listener financial support has never faltered, even in the toughest economic times. That says a lot about our listeners.
Yeah.
And this fall campaign is your opportunity to ensure that KUSP will continue to be vibrant in the months and years to come. Go ahead and help us out, and don't let Dr. Don and Charlie down. Come on, matching gift. That's great.
Yeah, no, we want to meet that thing. And you can do it. Right now, there's 1,400 left to go. So just as we've been talking, things have trickled down a little bit. So, you know, do not tarry. You'll be joining folks like Louise and Felton and Cindy in Santa Cruz and Bonnie and Carmel and Dan and Darlene and San Juan Batista, Holly in Big Sur, Jocelyn and Scott in Scotts Valley, Marianne in Salinas, who's joining KUSP for the first time. Welcome, welcome, Marianne. Samantha and Marina, lots and lots of people contacting us this morning. They love the lineup of programs on the weekend in the mornings, and you do too. You're listening now. So we're hoping that you'll come up with a contribution that works for you and contact us now. Have it doubled by Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky. Let's say $80. That's a nice comfortable amount for many people. If that's the case for you, then do contact us now. Just $1,300 left to go on that matching gift.
Right, and we're not talking about $80 every day.
No,
we're talking less than a dollar a day.
Far less.
Mm-hmm.
Far less.
Far less. If you can give a dollar a day, then for all means,
that's less than 50 cents
do
a day,
contact
isn't
us.
It?
It's yes.
Math again.
Math.
Yeah. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by UC Santa Cruz, home of the Center for Ocean Health, a research facility for coastal conservation policy and research. UC Santa Cruz, committed to protecting the health of the ocean and coastal regions, online at ucsc.edu. You're listening to 88.9 KUSP and KUSP.org. You can follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. And in fact, you can also learn about how particle accelerators are going to be treating nuclear waste possibly in the future.
Yeah, let's talk about that in just a minute.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that people know how to contact us. I just realized that might be handy. So there's a phone number you can use, and there's a web address you can use. I recommend highly the fine folks at the other end of 888-777-1507, and there's never any wait, and you can say as much as you like at our website, KUSP.org. So thank you for contacting us in one of those two ways. Just $1,300 left to go in the matching gift from Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky. So, Miles, you were saying.
Yes, I was saying that we were going to hit that story, but first, I was wondering if anyone had a geek bit.
Oh, I might have a geek bit for you. Computer game that lets you run a presidential campaign.
What?
I know. It's about $10 from Stardock Entertainment, and it's called The Political Machine 2012. So you would choose which candidate you want to represent in the 2012 election and make decisions about how to run their campaign. And you can play against opponents or play against the game. And they, in designing it, they attempted to exclude party bias. Who knows? I haven't actually played it myself.
Yeah.
But it looks pretty great on the internet pictures. I'll go ahead and put a link up on the geekspeak.org site after the show. Basically, the topics you can choose from are things like Afghanistan, economy, Obamacare, income equality, gay rights, and the national debt. And then also local stuff like right to work, minimum wage, local environmental policies, and farm subsidies.
So who came up with this program and why?
Stardock Entertainment. I'm not exactly sure why, other than, you know, the gaming thing.
It does.
Why
it does.
Do people
wait,
game?
I think that elections are on a lot of people's minds.
Well, they are
this year. So,
but what's interesting is that they're having you sort of craft your own, and I just wonder if it's part of that crowdsourcing, wisdom of the crowds. You know, sort of have everyone kind of figure out how to run a campaign and potentially come up with the best possible.
And
one,
also, or? Well, it makes me wonder if it's similar to my own reasons when I've said like, I want to make a game for that, which is didactic reasons. Wanting to make a game that puts you in a particular position so you can learn more about it. Because a lot of people say like, oh, they're all liars. But what happens, like...
get on the inside of it a little bit and see what it's really
right.
like.
Right. I think of SimCity, how people say like, okay. Oh, we should all have, you know, the clean stuff and we should make sure that we all have public transit and stuff like that. And yet when you play the game, you realize that there's this give and take that if you have no roads whatsoever and just have public transit, then you end up with people saying like, hey, come on, I'm having trouble getting there. And
that's exactly what they describe in the website, is that when people start playing it, they start sympathizing more with the positions of the politicians as far as having to make the hard decisions they make. Like, well, that one state with only two electoral votes that usually swing the other way really isn't worth my time campaigning in, and things like that. Mm-hmm. Who to ignore and who not to ignore. Yeah. What issues, you know, you may have things in your dear heart, but may not have time to go over them.
Right.
Oh, maybe I should gut education because it's a... yeah.
Fantastic. What a great program.
All right.
Well, no, I see what you're saying now. So it's sort of like a reality check for people, for armchair political complainers.
Mm-hmm. It could be.
Well, that and that idea, one, it could also be a training ground you know, for someone trying to do it better with it. And it could also just be the, I'm sure I could do well with this, and then really get into it and go like, oh, wait, this is more complicated than I thought. It's worse than I thought it was.
So many uses is what I'm hearing.
And another quick little geek bit I have is a clock that does not require batteries.
Oh.
And is not solar powered.
What? Is it one of those cranker things?
Atomic.
No, it is not a cranker thing. It does not require winding either. Uh-huh. It requires no motion on your part.
Really? How does it work?
Does it keep time?
Yes, it does.
It's correct 2 times a day.
Yes, it's no, it's actually a digital clock.
Oh, okay.
Digital. Yeah, it's an LCD.
All right, explain yourself, sir. I'm curious.
And so you have a little clock, and we'll have pictures of it up on the website, and people can link to it and read more about it. Mm-hmm. But you have this little clock, and you have the two power electrodes that come out of it, and you or little wires, and you plug that into a potted plant. And you water that plant on a regular basis, so you keep the plant alive, and that will actually generate a charge. Hmm. Similar to that effect you might think of from potatoes, if you've heard of like running a
potato clock.
Yeah, or
that classic science fair.
Or get a whole bunch of potatoes together and put a small light bulb and get it to dimly light up. Yeah.
All right, so it's one plant per clock. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So efficient that way. So something handy for green thumbs.
Yes. Or, you know.
You have to be able to keep the plant alive.
That
like
incentive to keep, you know, in order for time to keep it, time doesn't stop, you know. Yeah. If your time stops, the plant dies.
Right. It's a whole new TV show about to happen about
makes
that.
It gripping.
24 hours.
Watering my plants has become gripping.
But I did promise something about a particle accelerator and nuclear waste story, didn't I?
Yes.
I guess I should
turn
to that.
Could you let us know about that, please?
Yes, there's a...
concerned.
This is coming under, you know, Germany has decided they're going to abandon nuclear technology. Japan has saying, like, we're going to phase out of this by 2030. Of course, there's going to be multiple Japanese prime ministers from now until then, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But it appears that some researchers are finding that... some researchers in Belgium have found that if they have a subcritical reactor design, in other words, one that doesn't have a runaway, in other words, it's not a self-sustaining radioactive, what's the word I'm looking for? Chain reaction.
I can't help
there we
you.
Go.
Okay.
That if they have that driven by a particle accelerator, in other words, you know, they're either making materials for medicine, which is one thing the particle accelerators do, if you didn't already know that, but also for particle physics work, theoretical physics. Mm-hmm. And like, you can transmute the nuclear waste from other nuclear plants into something that goes away in about 200 years. The half-life is not 200 years, but the half-life is reduced to a point that in 200 years, so probably the half-life is like 20 years, because it's assumed that about 10 half-lives is when something becomes not dangerous enough to...
I'm so curious to see what the end of the sentence is going to be.
not harmful to human health, I guess, right, is one way you can describe it.
So are you saying that they're using a particle accelerator to reduce the amount of time that nuclear waste is a problem?
Yes. And they're also probably doing some enrichment as well, so separating out the various isotopes that's in there. Because I do want to mention that, yes, there's material that has a half-life of like 3.8 billion years. I'm sorry. That's uranium-238.
Yeah.
However, I have no problem with holding uranium-238 in my hand. Because if something has a very long half-life, it means it's not emitting very much.
Ah, okay. So it's not as dangerous in the short term.
Right. However, if you have something that has a half-life of 2 weeks,
yeah,
I don't want to hold that.
Yeah. So then a particle accelerator reduces the half-life of things and thereby makes them more dangerous.
Well, what it can do is the problem that we have with current nuclear waste is we have a mixture of the stuff that lasts a really long time with a mixture of the stuff that is short-lived, and they're interacting with one another.
So what does that mean?
And so what you're ending up with is for that short-lived, which is emitting, it's also interacting with the longer-lived, which is then creating daughter products that are also dangerous.
Okay.
And then...
So that because you have a mix of the short-term half-life stuff and the long-term half-life stuff in there, the short-term stuff kind of contaminates and
right,
makes more dangerous the long-term stuff.
Right. So if we could split out those items and reuse some other items, and you know, if we could not just take all of the things that come out of a light water reactor, which is only using, just to throw out a number, about 1-2% of all the energy potential in that fuel.
Okay.
And then didn't just, you know, say, hey, let's put this into cooling pools at the nuclear power station.
Yeah.
Then we could go a long way towards A, making better use of that energy, and B, reducing the issues associated with the waste that comes out of it.
Okay, so the particle accelerator is being used to separate out the bits so that we can deal with them appropriately.
And to make it reactive in such a way that we can use it for other purposes, yeah.
I see, okay. So making more efficient the whole nuclear waste issue.
So you're glad you didn't sell your particle accelerator on eBay like you were talking about earlier.
I'm so glad, you know. Sometimes it pays to be a hoarder.
Yes, sometimes it does.
Can I just pop in for a second here? I'm noticing that there's $1,100 left to go in the Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky match. This is a matching gift. Anyone who gives to KUSP right now in support of the show and the station has their contribution doubled by Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky. So we have $1,100 to raise in about 20 minutes. What that means for you is if you've got a minute right now, we'd love it if you'd just go to the phone, go to the web, make your contribution now so that we know that's going to get handled.
Or in that case where I can totally empathize, where I'm listening to public radio and I'm driving down the freeway, it's a Saturday. You're probably
you can
not
afford
that,
to pull over.
Yeah, we don't want you to, you know, try making a pledge while you're driving. That's no bueno.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that next exit that's coming up in a quarter mile, turn off of it. Go off on, you know, just do a quick little parking job, call in, or if you have your phone, you can do it from your mobile phone.
Yeah.
Make a pledge, get right back on that on-ramp that's right next to it. You've wasted, what, 30 seconds of your day?
But no waste there. You've done something very excellent with that pull-off.
Right. That's right. It's a return on investment. It's a return on investment of 30 seconds of your time gives you all of that time that you listen to NPR, to Dr. Don, to Geek Speak, to Talk of the Bay, towards all those other shows, the music programs that we love on KUSP.
They happen because of listener support. I hope you're doing your part, particularly if you have not given to the station before. It's a really important thing to do to let us know that because you're listening, you also understand that you're part of the public we're talking about when we talk about public radio.
Right. And when I talked earlier about infrastructure, like for the podcast and pledging to KUSP, that you get all these other things that can bring Geek Speak to life for you over the interwebs. Mm-hmm. That infrastructure includes the ability to charge $20 a month on a card. Like, so you can make a pledge to say, have your card charged regularly $20 a month, as opposed to doing some big lump sum right now that you may not be able to handle.
Well, that's actually how I'm able to give what I'm able to give, is by parsing it out over the year. And now, if you're in the position like me where, geez, like, I give year after year after year, I could just kind of say, could we save the communication every 6 months and just know that you're going to take it out of my card because I'm going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. You could become a sustaining member of KUSP and do it that way also. That's lovely. So the way you contact us is by calling 888-777-1507. You can go to the website, kusp.org, even from your mobile phone if you have one of those smarty pants phones. And just go ahead and take care of it. It takes a couple minutes or less. And then you know that you've taken care of this program, you've taken care of KUSP, you've taken care of the access for other people to this community resource. So thank you.
I just had this thought of like SpongeBob Smarty Phones Pants.
Well, that phone's coming, I'm sure.
Of which we do mourn actually the passing of the voice behind SpongeBob SquarePants. He recently passed away.
What?
I didn't know.
Tom Kenny?
I believe so, yes.
You believe so?
That's unless you know the interwebs are wrong.
Yeah.
The interwebs
are wrong. I need your research. I'm shocked and saddened.
But
who's funny?
Well, I can't get the images out of my head from earlier of a bunch of scientists standing around in a room trying to do an experiment with heat and talking like they're in helium. That's the excellent image for me.
Oh, God. What is the name of that substance that when you breathe it, it makes your voice lower?
I didn't even know there was such a thing.
Yeah, sulfur something or another.
It's a heavier gas.
Yeah, I've forgotten the molecule. And
the Barry White.
Yeah,
actually, it does make you, it gives that much lower tone. At the same time, you have to empty your lungs manually. Because with helium is lighter than air, so it will escape from your body naturally just because you're upright, it'll come out of your mouth and you're done.
So do you mean by burping? How do you manually?
So you need to stand on your head or invert yourself in some way and let it leak out. But in the meantime, you're able to you can sound like Barry White.
You can do it all day, I guess. Just hold on to that stuff.
I don't know if I want to sound like Barry White.
Well, no, you don't want to hold on to it. And exactly the same reason why you don't want to breathe helium all day, which is it's not the air
it's
that you
oxygen.
Would need to actually sustain your bodily processing. So it wouldn't react with your body, which is good. It's not toxic. It's just,
Do not try this at home.
Being Barry White can be dangerous. All right, so $1,000 left in that matching gift from Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky. You know, if you did want to give $20 a month, it would become $480 thanks to that matching gift. And it was a nice way to take care of it.
We have just less than $1,000 left to go, but only 15 minutes left to go.
Tick,
so,
tick, tick, ladies and gentlemen.
Tick, tick, tick.
We can do this.
But we're going to do this while Lindsay covers our next story.
Sure. So I have an Android phone, and so this was near and dear to my heart, and it's just sort of one of my normal public service upgrade announcements. But a security reacher named Ravi Borgaonkar, I have no idea how to pronounce that.
Okay, yes. A security researcher.
Yes, yeah. A security researcher. He posted on his blog that certain cell phones using Google's Android operating system are at risk of being disabled or wiped clean of their data, including contacts, music, photos, based on a security flaw that he found.
Presuming you haven't synced it recently.
Right.
Who does that?
It can still wipe clean even if you have it synced, but then you just wouldn't lose your data. You'd have to restore. And if you've ever had to restore your phone, you know that it's not the most fun thing in the world. It takes time, and time is precious, as we know, with 15 minutes to go.
Yes, time is electricity.
Exactly.
Is plants.
Yeah.
It is.
That's true, yeah.
So this bug works by taking advantage of functions in phones that allow them to dial a telephone number directly from a web browser. So if you browse to a hacked or malicious page, it may be able to instruct the phone to dial the numbers and codes, including those used to do a remote wipe of the phone, that security feature that people often enable. So since most hackers are interested in profits, this is probably not that likely to happen, so don't panic. But this is just a malicious type thing if somebody was actually doing it.
So in other words, pranks are going to be flooding across U.S. universities around the world.
Exactly. So Google was informed of the vulnerability in June, and a fix was released really quickly. but it wasn't publicized. So essentially, if you have an Android phone, this is your friendly reminder. If you haven't updated your phone since June or so, you may want to consider doing that. If you know some pranksters, which I know a few.
There are.
I've updated.
Wait, geek pranksters?
Yeah.
Who would ever heard of
that? Those innocent souls?
Anything but that. No way.
So speaking of innocent souls, like you perhaps, driving down the road.
Yes, you who are innocent because you have not yet given to public radio. You dewy new members of KUSP, potentially
members.
It
turns out that the font used on the dashboard of your car may make the difference between an accident and not.
Are you talking about papyrus and Comic Sans just being a terrible thing to try and read on the fly?
No. I'm actually talking about the letters that are on the dashboard, on your speedometer, on your odometer.
Oh.
When it talks about like what the mileage is, the trip counter, or right. The trip mileage, the air conditioning,
okay.
All of those.
Okay, so not even like if you're in a fancy car with one of those screens, but just
right.
This.
Fonts are not just the things that can change on a computer. Fonts are also things that may be silk screened on your system, or it may be the fonts that are in your touchscreen nowadays that are in the, mm-hmm. newer fancy cars.
Yeah.
All you Prius drivers, we know who you are. Yes,
you're talking about yourself there, Mr.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's this now? What's this about the
fonts? MIT researchers have found that certain fonts cause drivers to spend more time looking away from the road as opposed to certain other alternative typefaces.
And are you talking about just readability or what?
Yeah, well...
Or are we just entranced?
It may be a mixture of both. But what they're doing, what they did find, was that drivers are spending more time looking away from the road, which will translate... Think of all those times in your life... I'm not going to name names, but all those times in your life where you've been driving and... You look at something that's inside your car. You're looking to like, oh God, it's really hot in here. I need to turn down the heat. And you're looking down, trying to find that dial or look at the items. Then you look up, and just in time, you hit that brake pedal, and you have inches, centimeters, millimeters to spare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out if you had a different font, you would have crashed.
So they carefully chose the fonts that are on your dashboard, or they're wanting to redo fonts that are already on dashboard?
Well, there's the question, because different cars have different fonts.
Yeah.
So it may be that when you had that crash, where you just had that little fender bender, mm-hmm. you might have been able to avoid it had you had a different font.
Ooh. Do I hear a bunch of potential suits to car companies coming?
Darn you, Comic Sans.
It's your fault. You silk screened the wrong font on my dashboard.
Who does this research? That's what I want to know.
MIT. As it turns out, MIT.
Nice.
MIT's age lab.
Their age lab?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
I'm sure their age lab also does things like the transitions that occur due to aging and how different people, different ages, are able to perceive things.
Okay. So font size as well may be an issue.
So if you're squinting,
well, that
at your
is
dash.
Definitely that is definitely an issue, and it's not just for aging, but for
just for readability in general.
So if I've got
whether you're farsighted versus nearsighted, and all that, how quickly you can refocus from distances to close by.
That's a good point.
My problem is the Las Vegas factor of the dash. You know, all the bright lights.
So pretty.
What am I looking at again?
Ooh. Hey, things are happening fast here. Sorry for keep busting in, but just things keep happening. There's $650 left to go.
$650?
We've had some
nice.
Sort of a lovely outcry of support, which needs to continue. We have 10 minutes left of the program. Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky very generously offered what was a $1,700 match. There's just $650 left on that.
Oh, but 10 minutes to do $650, that's a challenge.
It's a challenge. If you're a person who has not yet given to KUSP before, now's a fine time. I do note that most people in that category tend to give around $80 or so. That's a very popular
and now's
level.
Now's the time to get free money. You donate, we get a free dollar. It's free money.
Free money. Well, it's yes. So
let's not deal with logic here. We're doing a sales pitch.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Urgency. Yes. So do contact us now. We would love to be able to meet that whole match from Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky during this hour.
And while we are waiting for your calls, Lindsay, you have another story for us.
Sure. Why not? I'm going to talk about another Jerry Brown signed into law.
Governor
thing.
Jerry Brown.
I'm sorry, Governor Jerry Brown. You know what I mean. Thanks.
California Governor Jerry Brown.
California Governor Jerry
context,
Brown.
Context.
He signed a pair of privacy bills making it illegal for employers and colleges to demand access to social media accounts. And the restriction doesn't apply to passwords or information used on employer-issued electronic devices. The thing about this for me is that I didn't even know you could do this. The fact that there has to be something signed to say you can't was kind of astonishing to me. I can't imagine going into a job interview and having somebody say, we need your Facebook login in order to hire you. And for me, I'd walk right out. But maybe if somebody really needs the job, they would actually
hand that
over.
Yeah, that's the question. Like, a lot of people don't have that option. They say, well, you just find another job. It's like, well, what's the unemployment rate right now?
Yeah. Single income, bunch of kids, you know, mortgage. Yeah. What are you going to, you know, somebody might actually do something like that. So it's interesting because I'm wondering if that's going to spread.
Right. And there's that whole, the whole ethics of that. I believe we talked about it on the show before, but just to recap, that notion of, someone's going to know what you do on the weekend. Someone's going to know
your private life becomes business.
Right.
Yeah.
For that matter, is there an equitable exchange there? Do you get to ask the interviewer what's yours?
Well, that does seem fair, doesn't it?
What are you involved in? Are you a fan of Ayn Rand or not?
What's your Twitter handle?
I have another Facebook one when you're ready.
Yes, I'm absolutely ready.
Bonnie's
what?
Got something
well,
to say.
I've got something to say, man. It's this urgency thing. We've got 7 minutes left of the program. We've got $400 left on that matching gift. And we've got a way for people to contact us. And I want to make sure that people have that. That's the thing I'm concerned about. 888-777-1507 is the phone number. KUSP.org is the web address. I just wanted to bust in there and give the actual contact information. 888-777-1507 or KUSP.org.
Yeah. And whereas in the past it was a big red button, now it's a big red lower semicircle at the top right-hand corner that says in big, bold fonts saying donate. There's also in the middle, there's a support KUSP as well, but I'm looking at that donate at the...
Yeah, big, gorgeous donate red half moon. It's delicious.
Yes, and for anyone who gets this reference, the big, red, shiny candy-like button.
Oh, we do love it.
Yes.
All right, we're showing
the next Facebook story, please, Lindsay.
Sure. So now you can send, well, maybe not you, but some people in some cities, in some states, can send presents to friends over Facebook.
You mean besides like the poke and the super poke, right?
Yes. And
is that still a thing, the poke?
Is that a present?
So, no.
I don't know.
No, I haven't seen one in quite a while.
I am the beholder on that one. But Facebook did make an attempt in the past to do this gift thing, but it was for virtual gifts. And this is actual physical gifts. So Facebook partners are going to allow you to, let's say you get that little birthday reminder and you can say, send a gift and then choose from all sorts of, right now, just 100 different vendors that they're using for a launch, like Starbucks, places that sell teddy bears and kid toys, baked goods, stuff like that. So you can send a cake to somebody. And they're testing this out in certain areas and then over the next few months going to roll it out to everybody. And that's a big thing that they're getting into the market because there's already Amazon
Google. So that is the marketing angle to it. Let's talk a little about the geek angle.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the geek angle?
So Facebook is a content aggregator. They take a whole bunch of data from a whole bunch of people in order to, you know, target ads, mm-hmm. or things like that. Now, this is now extending into meat space. This is in real life. So you go out to a retailer.
Meat space.
And I now... Facebook knows where you're shopping.
Yeah.
Even when you're not online.
Why do they know that? Because you're carrying your smartphone around with you? How do they know that?
Where you're sending gifts they're mailing you the
It's all mail.
Sorry, I was thinking of something else. Okay.
You're getting like gift certificate for them to go buy it or whatever. Yeah. No.
Oh.
This is essentially what it happens. I could send you a meat cake.
Now I remember what it was called. I'm getting some sulfur hexafluorine.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, here I am. I'm going to get. Oh, no.
Yeah, you're going to do the job.
Okay, so what you're saying is that if I'm on Facebook and I get my little birthday notification that it's Joe Schmo Fancy Pants' birthday, I go, oh my gosh, I have to get Joe Schmo Fancy Pants a gift, and I can click on something from one of those bajillion million ads on the sidebar.
And then what happens is the you know, Joe Schmo is going to get something saying, hey, so-and-so wants to send you a gift. Enter your address and your custom specifications, like your t-shirt size or, you know, what color you want it in. And they fill this information out and then it ships. If they don't receive, you know, they don't accept it within 2 weeks being mailed to them, then you get a refund, supposedly.
Okay. And why don't you send us a gift?
You're right.
With 888-777-1507, because
we're not looking for teddy bears or
right,
cookies.
Right, and we don't report back to Facebook either. We don't.
No, we don't.
There's
yeah,
nothing going through there. It's just between you
it's
and us.
It's direct communication.
Yes, absolutely.
And why is that important right now, Miles?
Direct communication is important to keep us on the air, to give us to bring shows like this to you at www.kusp.org or geekspeak.org. Although that's where you would get show information. If you want to pledge money, you actually have to go to KUSP.org. Although we do have a link.
There's a link. If you go to KUSP.org, you can get to GeekSpeak and vice versa.
Yes. It's a wonderful how the web works that way. These links that take you to other sites.
Yeah.
And once again, the phone number, and we have $100 to go. You could be that one that puts us over the top.
Woohoo.
1-888-777-1507.
Now, that's just $100 left in the matching gift from Dr. Don Motika and Charlie Mansky.
Yeah, that's happily, the $100 left of free money.
Yeah, of free money. Happily, there is no limit on how many people can give to this show right now. So if you're thinking about it, thank you for doing something about it at 888-777-1507 or KUSP.org.
And let's talk a little bit about rent-to-own computers. Rent-to-own PCs. Yeah.
Oh.
It's cheaper. You just pay that little bit of money, and then if you decide you want to have the computer, then you can buy it, or you can have the computer upgraded and just pay this fee monthly.
Oh, like how businesses pay a leasing fee for their copy machine or whatever.
Right. But over time, yeah, you just get a new one and you just keep paying that fee. And as it turns out, that one of these some of these rent-to-own companies have had federal charges filed against them for having the webcam on the system turning on when from a central location, like they're from their central offices able to turn on the webcam and start recording for without the person knowing that it's happening.
Oh, this is something we covered an angle on this some time back, as I recall.
Yeah, schools. We're mm-hmm. busted
yeah,
for doing
but this. But this is not just school. This is people in general doing that rent-to-own scheme. This is something that's a drawback to not owning your computer or owning the software that you
is you don't have as much
with.
Control
yeah.
over who pushes what buttons centrally to spy on you.
Right. And unfortunately, I'm leaving it on that note because we are coming to the end of our show. And I do need to say that GeekSpeak is...
Is what? Is what, Miles?
Is what? Oh, my God. It's the humanity. Well, I do have to say the Car Talk on KSP is made possible by a grant from Chamber Music Monterey Bay, presenting trio Trisolisti with John Manasse on the clarinet and featuring a world premiere by Kevin Putz Friday evening, October 12th at 8 p.m. at Sunset Center in Carmel. More information at chambermusicmonterey.org. This is KUSP Santa Cruz. This has been Geeks.